The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, FA Cup final. Will Man City be ruthless? Will Stoke City be ruthless? And will the Stretford End soon be needing a new comedy banner? The pod previews this tale of two cities and asks what the dickens will happen. Meantime, Premier League with 180 minutes to go. We focus on the teams battling to avoid catastrophe. Spurs and Liverpool. Like it or not, one of them's got to go into the Europa League. Plus, there's all the drama at the bottom. Will the Hammers play like Spanners? Will relegation be a wrench? Or will it all go pear-shaped for the Tangerines? There's the big finale in Holland. Why Neil Lennon so unpopular? Why Juve may play in France? And why the tractor's beaming? All of that plus posts, a bit on the playoffs and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody. Special Football Weekly today. Producer Pete back. old school. And Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, and Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And Simon Burnton.
Hello.
All right. FA Cup. Excited?
I'm quite excited for this one, as FA Cup finals go, given that I am, by nature, a bit of a grump when it comes to meetings of big teams. And this is unusual in that there's one big team that is desperate for silverware and a credible smaller challenger.
Hmm.
And recently, there was West Ham when they played Liverpool. It was a similar situation, a big team desperate for silverware and a credible challenger. But otherwise, this kind of pair-up has been too rare recently.
Well, we were talking just before we came on the pod about when was the last great Wembley FA Cup final, and you probably have to go back to Palace against Manchester United the first game, and then before then probably Coventry Spurs in 87, and you'd hope that it would have those sort of elements that the underdogs really pushing for it.
What about 89, Liverpool Everton?
I think Hillsborough and the terrible things that happened at Hillsborough, inevitably tarnished that final, even though actually the game itself wasn't a bad one. Actually, I think it was quite a dull 90 minutes and picked up an extra time, but I think Hillsborough's always going to have a cloud over that game.
All right. City coming into this game off a very competent-looking 1-0 win over Spurs. You're frowning at me, Sean. They looked absolutely resolute at the back, didn't they?
Well, they did, but they were the way they play, it's like buying, the richest necklace in the world.
And to say it was competent, I didn't say it was...
Okay, but then hiding it behind a big woolly jumper, and you'd want a little bit more when you've got that amount of talent and you've spent that amount of money on the pitch. Well done to City, I think we should say that they've reached Champions League final. I do think, though, that probably Mancini has to win this game to keep his job.
Do you, Sean?
But personally, I think finishing third, fourth, wherever they finish now, and perhaps win the FA Cup is about par, given the money they've spent. If they were not to win a trophy and with all the money spent, I think that he'd probably go at the end of the season.
All right. As I say, a 1-0 win over Spurs, which featured a comedy vignette from Carlos Tevez, who was fighting to prove his fitness ahead of the FA Cup final, but got rather bored of running up and down. And him and Mancini, it was basically another chapter in their ongoing... Yeah.
But we all need to hope, for the sake of the Cup final, that Tevez is in a good condition. City's defence and Tevez have been the two elements of their team that have genuinely convinced this season. And if there's no Tevez, you worry that it might be a bit attritional.
City's defence, are they the best equipped unit to deal with the Stoke set-piece, long ball, etc. threat?
Well, they didn't last week against Everton, who beat them with two headers. Started pumping the ball forward in the second half, and City couldn't handle it. I think because in the first half, City outplayed them, outpassed them, and Everton realised they couldn't cope with that and just thought, right, let's hit it long. And Stoke have troubled them in the past. I think they knocked them out of the Cup last season as well.
One or two injury worries, of course. Matthew Etherington very much in doubt for this game, is that right? And Huth as well, the top scorer. Yeah.
And Pennant could be a lot of trouble for City, though. They tend to struggle in the left-back position. I think they're quite worried about that.
And it's fair to point out that without Etherington, they still turned over Arsenal a treat last weekend, didn't they?
Yeah.
Mm. Walters scoring goals. Not since 1972 for them, a cup final. Never in the FA Cup final. Did you know, this is interesting, isn't it? It was only, 1998 that City went down to League One? Yeah. And do you know who the other team were relegated on that day?
Stoke.
And now they meet in the FA Cup final.
And do you know, in fact, who Manchester City played in the last game of the season where they were relegated?
Stoke.
Yeah. That is bizarre, isn't it?
It's a funny old thing.
And do you know who they're playing again on Tuesday, Simon?
Do you know who they were scheduled from the start of the season?
Right.
Who Manchester City were scheduled to play this Saturday?
Stoke.
Stoke.
What are the odds?
Is there an answer? Is there any question that doesn't have the answer, Stoke, that you're going to throw up now, Jimbo?
But I can think of one or two.
You've got a coal fire. It needs to be warmed up.
Right.
You've got a poker. What are you going to do to the fire? Stoke it.
Stoke it, Sean. Fantastic. There you go. Now, you mentioned that third, fourth thing of where are Man City going to finish, because they are now confirmed top four. So they will have a pop at the Champions League, but at present it's through the preliminaries. They're only 2 points behind Arsenal, though. And I suspect that you, as a betting man, might favour their chances over the Gunners to finish in the top three and get direct entry.
Well, I mean, clearly Arsenal are struggling a little bit, but they have got to play Villa at home, and Villa haven't got much to play for. Arsenal, despite an atrocious performance at Stoke, they should still have too much for Villa.
All right.
It's quite important as well who finishes fourth place, because if City don't get it, they won't be seeded for the qualifying positions. And they could, for example, get Bayern Munich in the qualifying rounds. It would be very City if they were to go and get knocked out there.
Yeah. So, chances of an upset this weekend then at Wembley?
I think they're quite high. If you looked at the last three seasons, they play each other seven times. There's been two Man City wins, two Stoke wins, and 3-1 all draws. So I'm not saying it will happen, but you know, Stoke at roughly 3-1, that's just over 25% chance winning. I'd say it's probably a touch higher than that.
Yeah, they beat Arsenal last week. There's no reason why they can't go and beat City now.
Simon?
Well, obviously they'll have the support, I imagine, of the vast majority of the population, and certainly mine, for what it's worth. I'll be shouting from Yorkshire. I think they do have the team to do it, but I think that it would be a blow to them if they were missing both Huth and Etherington, and irrespective of the quality of their replacements, that for morale purposes alone, it would hurt a little bit.
Mm.
So fingers crossed they'll have one or both of those players back, and I think that they do have quality in attack, and a different kind of quality. And I don't think, and I have no problems with the way that Stoke play. I don't think that they are horribly ugly and agricultural. I think that they're a decent team. I look forward to them giving Manchester City a really good game.
They've been scoring plenty of goals of late as well. I mean, not least in the semi-final. As one final thing from City's point of view, could this be the game for Balotelli to finally come up with the goods, I think, in a way that he hasn't really been doing in the last month or two. In a week that's seen his, the good side, the charitable side of his nature.
He was it an autograph hunter at City's training ground?
Yeah.
And he asked why he wasn't in school. And he said, well, I'm being bullied. So he drove him back to school and confronted the bully with the headmaster. And the bully promised he wasn't going to do it again. So that's Super Mario for you.
Tell you what. How about that?
He should perhaps do a bit more of this conflict mediation in the large amounts of time he spends suspended from playing football.
Yeah. Nice to see, anyway, a bit of positive behaviour from a football player. And that's it for part one. In a second or two, some very unpositive behaviour from north of the border. Hi, Ewan Murray in Scotland.
There must be trouble brewing.
Don't tell me there's been more bad news in Scottish football.
When's the season finish?
Neil Lennon, Celtic manager, assaulted by a fan in Celtic's win at Tynecastle against Hearts.
Correct.
Right. Why? Why is everybody... What has Neil Lennon done that people are sending him explosive devices, running onto the pitches and trying to smack him in the face? What's going on, Ewan?
I'll tell you what Neil Lennon's explanation of this is, and he said it on record. I quoted him in the Observer a couple of weeks ago. He said, I'm a high-profile Roman Catholic in Scotland, and some people here don't like that. Listen, last night, as you say, is just the latest sad, disgusting, appalling act in what has been a pretty hellish few months for Neil Lennon. No one could see it coming. The Hearts-Celtic fixture has got pretty poisonous in the last few years. It used to be like that in the 80s. It seemed to have calmed down, but the last 5 years or so, it has got volatile again. But no one could have anticipated what happened last night. It was shocking.
Right. So a fan ran on. This was what, the end of the first half?
No, it was actually 49 minutes in. Gary Hooper scored Celtic's second goal. Celtic were comfortable in the game, cruising. They went 2-0 up. Game over, really. The waiter scored a third. Lennon celebrated as normal. About 60 seconds later, a punter ran out the enclosure section of the main stand. With the alarming bit, obviously, the fact that he got to Lennon, got into the technical area, kind of jumped at him, connected with him before the Celtic coaching staff and the police waded in. So, I mean, it's not too much of a leap of faith to worry what might have happened there. Fans aren't searched going into Tynecastle. So the guy could have had anything, and anything could have happened. Mm. It's the most, I always admire Neil Lennon and how unfazed he seems almost by all the badness that goes on around him. But last night is the most shaken I've seen him. I mean, he was visibly shaken by the incident.
Mm. No, I can understand that.
The key thing, James, now is what happens next. I mean, does Neil Lennon, he's made such a play of how much he wants this job. Celtic have made it clear that he can keep the job for as long as he wants, certainly in the short to medium term. But, he's got a partner, he's got a young kid. We've now got a situation where he's been placed in danger while carrying out his work. So, I think it's legitimate to ask, is he willing to put himself through that again into next season and willing to do the job he loves and the job he wants when it's putting him at such risk?
Is there anything that Lennon's done in his career that makes him, I mean, other than the accident of his religion, that makes him the object of such hatred? It's a decade now, almost. It's 9 years since he was forced to retire from international football after getting death threats, and they're still at it. And is there anything about him or the way that he behaves? Or is it just the religion, or has he done anything to provoke it?
The line that's routinely been trotted out here, Simon, is that there's a, Neil Lennon's playing style angered people who didn't like the fact he was a aggressive player, a nippy player, a snarling player almost, and he's pretty much the same as a manager. But I mean, it's obvious that there's more than that. There is a sectarian element to it where Lennon is concerned. And in terms of last night, the heart support has this element to it as well, which I think the club have been too soft in dealing with, and kind of let it creep back in. And the result is, the terrible situation of what happens on an occasion like last night. But as I said to you at the start, Lennon's explanation on it is perfectly straightforward. He feels it's because of his religion and because of his status.
Mm. Ewan, in other news, Rangers have finally got taken over. Nice to see an injection of new money into the Scottish game, even if it is only £1.
Yeah, that's, you forget the debt that Craig White has had to take on.
Right.
At Ibrox, of course. Listen, James, no one knows how that one's going to play out. That's a simple answer to that. It was a relief for David Murray and a relief for Lloyds Bank, I think, to separate the Murray group from Rangers after more than 2 years of trying. Any fresh investment into Scottish football, as you say, should be welcomed. Fresh investment into Rangers as one of the leading clubs should be welcomed. But the million-dollar question is whether Craig White has the ability and the wherewithal to fund Rangers to the level required.
Hmm.
He's convinced some people that he can. Others, as a statement coming out of Ibrox last Friday night illustrated, are yet to be convinced. But the Rangers saga has gone on and on and on. And most Rangers fans are just happy that there's been closure put on that for now. But to me, the most intriguing chapter will be the next one as to how the Craig White Rangers experiment plays out.
All right, should be an interesting summer. Let's hope that things don't get any worse before the end of the season, and that things take a better turn over the summer. Ewan, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, James. Speak to you soon.
Ewan Murray in Scotland. Quick mention for Serie A: Coppa Italia semi-finals this midweek. Milan losing to Palermo. Inter with a 1-1 draw at the Stadio Olimpico, which saw them go through, which also saw Javier Zanetti make his 1,000th appearance in a professional football match, following in the footsteps of Peter Shilton, Ray Clements, Pat Jennings, Alan Ball, David Seaman, Paolo Maldini, and Andoni Zubizarreta, Roberto Carlos, and Tommy Hutchinson. Those are the other players who've made 1,000, etc. Hang on, isn't Pelé? No, maybe not.
He scored 1,000 goals.
Scored 1,000 and thingy, okay. Zanetti's played 748 of those games for Inter. So,
James, if you had to pick one of him and Maldini, who would you...
In my team? If I was making a dream team?
Yeah, if you had to pick one player... I know they play on different sides, but...
Yeah, but... Oh, that's a tough question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to look beyond Maldini. You'd feel you were... And yet, it depends, really.
Zanetti is a very good player.
Well, he is. If I was building a house, I'd want Zanetti to come in and do kind of the brickwork and stuff, but then I'd want the interior decoration done by Maldini. I think that would be my answer.
No, I was just going to ask, I mean, you've obviously dealt with him and met with him and talked to him several times, and what's he like as a guy? He's always come across as a really top guy.
You couldn't meet a nicer person. He does loads of work for charity, those less fortunate than he. And astonishing career. I mean, he just doesn't get stopped by injury or anything. He just plays and plays and plays. And we've seen so many games this year that you think Zanetti's been at the peak of his form, and he's 36. And why he never went to the World Cup last year, I think this 1,000th appearance only underlines the folly of that decision. But anyway, yes, he says he enjoyed his 1,000th game, and he's looking forward to his 1,000th and first. And what a brilliant signing for Inter. I mean, they've made so many duff signings over the years, Inter, but that they really nailed that one. The other bit of Italian news, actually, Italy switching to a collective TV rights deal. I don't know if when the lefties got into government, they hastily put this through, and amazingly, it survived Berlusconi's return to power. The fact that, you know, under the old arrangement, basically Milan, Inter, and Juve would divvy up all the money. And now it's a collective deal. But there's a lot of arguing over how they work out who gets what in the collective deal, because it depends how many fans you got. And how do you work out how many fans you got? And we've seen punches thrown between the presidents already. And yesterday there was a vote that went against the five big clubs. And Juve are so incensed about it. I mean, they're all upset, the biggies. But Juve are so incensed that today they are threatening to take Juventus to play abroad. Does this mean possibly playing in the Premier League or the French League? We are evaluating all options, says Juve president Andrea Agnelli.
That is ridiculous, though, isn't it?
Of course it is.
They probably haven't been Milton Keynes.
Well, Juve do have a slight history of upping sticks when they're not happy with an arrangement. In the Champions League a year or two back, when they weren't happy with their rental deal at the Stadio degli Alpi, they played their games at San Siro a couple of times and down in Palermo. Handling.
Well, they're a strange club because I know I've seen them a couple of times, and they don't get a huge number of fans, do they?
Not
but,
in Turin,
but
no.
You know, but yeah,
they
Turin.
Sell out in Milan.
But they have, you know, across Italy, they're a
Liga. We'll talk to Sid on Monday. Of course, Barcelona got their Champions League final coming up with Manchester United. In the meantime, they have now finally sealed the Liga title, their third consecutive Spanish title, with a 1-1 draw against Levante. And there's all sorts of action in the relegation battle too. Sid will bring us up to date on all of that come after the weekend. Spanfrong, though, posting, he says, I find it quite appalling, and it's very much the word to use in this context, Spanfrong, that there is nothing on the Guardian side about Twente's incredible come-from-behind win against Ajax in last weekend's Dutch Cup final. My vote for game of the season. And to top it all, the winning team got bathrobes. How cool are the Dutch, says Spanfrong. An incredible spectacle all round, apparently. Well, joining us now on the line is Rutger Slachter. Rutger, are you there?
I am here. How are you doing, James?
Very
well. Did I
pronounce
that correctly?
Yeah, no, yeah, you did. Sorry about my... Anyway, you must be very excited. What a finale to the Dutch season.
Yeah, last 7 days of the season. And it's all or nothing for Twente and Ajax. Both had a chance for the double. And both could have gone home empty-handed before last week, before the cup final, of course.
An incredible game, Rutger.
Yeah, it was an incredible game. Ajax took a 2-0 lead, deserved that lead because they were playing better in the first half. After the break, it all turned around, and it goes to show how strong mentally FC Twente are this season, and also last season, of course, to finish it off and go home with the cup and the bathrobes.
And the bathrobes. Is that it? Is that a common thing in Dutch Cup football?
Yeah. You always see the winners walking around in the bathrobes. I'm not sure if that's just for one day or if they go home and the next morning when they come out of the showers, they wear it again. But it is common, yeah.
Why? Why a bathrobe?
Good question. didn't expect that question. Because they're probably sweaty and need something warm after the final.
Right, but these are special presentational souvenir bathrobes, not just...
Yeah, they are.
I think it's an excellent... You think about it, you are sweaty. Often you've been deluged in champagne. Your work clothes are thoroughly unusable. You need a change, and that's
perfect. True. Yeah, although I don't think there was a big party after the game. Because everybody was already focusing on the next game, this Sunday, the league decider, Ajax Twente again. I don't think that there was a big celebration with a lot of alcohol and that kind of stuff.
Because
they're so focused.
Yeah, this two-game series, very much halfway through. Twente could take the Dutch Cup, but they are 1 point ahead of Ajax in the Eredivisie, with the two teams facing each other on the last day of the season.
Yeah, this is unique. This has never happened before in Holland, that the final game of the season is between the numbers 1 and 2, and they can both win it. Ajax need to win, of course, on Sunday at home, and Twente can win or draw to take home the league title. It's unique. I don't think it's unique in the rest of the world, because I think in Wales they had it last week. But for us here in Holland, it's rather special.
It seems a long time ago we used to see Ajax in the Champions League finals and that. And Johan Cruyff returned to the club, which was meant to kind of see a bit of a revolution there and them put back to winning ways. How is that going?
For Johan Cruyff, it's going well. For the current board of directors, it's not going as well. Because, Cruyff was actually on an advisory committee. And they were asked by the board of directors from Ajax to hand in a report, how can we make the club better. And when Cruyff handed in the reports, the board of directors suddenly decided, well, this is going a bit too fast, and we want some responsibility as well. So it ended up in this big shouting match and bit of a battle. And, you know, when you go in against Cruyff, you know you're going to lose. So we're now in a position of a bit of a transformation at Ajax, and the current board will step down over the next couple of weeks. And Cruyff and his people will step in, probably.
All right.
But this all started, of course, when Ajax was still trailing by 5 or 6 points last month or 2 months ago. So I wonder if Cruyff hopes Ajax will win the league title, because if they do, well, perhaps you shouldn't change too much, to be honest.
All right. Well, it's going to be an amazing finale. Rutger, thank you so much for joining us today and explaining all
of
that. And look forward to speaking to you again soon. Lovely chat. Rutger Slachter.
Lovely chat.
Interesting to have a game where the losers get a dressing down and the winners get a dressing gown.
A dressing gown. I wonder if they get those little slip-on toweling, you know, things to walk around in.
So I bet you're the kind of guy, Jimbo, that, you know, when you get to a hotel, you actually take them with you, don't you, those little...
I certainly do not, Sean Ingle.
You're allowed to.
No, you're not. You have to pay if you do.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, why would they let
you?
Really? Short and innocent.
Sure. How many do you have? I can just imagine you being a sort of Imelda Marcos type with all your little kind of take-home slippers.
That's very much how I roll, isn't it, Imelda Marcos? So on that high note, let's finish part two. Coming up in part three, posts from you, the listener, and all sorts of other delights as well. Let's get some posts then. Looney Rooney says, what? Not a word on Heskey going loco on the ref last weekend, then carrying it on down the tunnel. If Heskey was called Rooney and played for United, etc., etc., etc. It's true, though. It was a bit out of order, wasn't it? Big Emil.
It was the first time he gets angry in his whole career, and then he gets subbed.
And but he's escaped without repercussions.
Yeah, very strange. And he was chasing the...
He barged into him.
And he was chasing him for a while, and they had to send him home.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
Strange,
but the truth of the matter is that there is essentially a different system of punishments for players, for high-profile players in top-level teams, and that's just the way that it is. And they profit from that in their salaries and their image rights. But if Rooney swears to it at a camera after scoring a hat-trick, a different thing happens to if Emil Heskey swears at the camera after missing yet another open goal.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wonder if you're going to go for the hat-trick comparison. Postman Hat says, the conference playoff final was decided this week. Best result possible with two Phoenix from the Ashes clubs getting through Luton and AFC Wimbledon. Final is going to be at Eastlands. And a very interesting fact, Luton in the non-league with virtually no away fans have a higher average attendance than all but 14 of the teams in Leagues 1 and 2. That's amazing, isn't it?
This is bizarre. I was just thinking, I went to the FA Cup semi-final when the two teams played each other in 1988.
What?
Yeah, and Wimbledon won 2-1.
Right.
Luton come off the back of winning the Littles Cup. God, I just can't believe it's 23 years ago.
Neither can I, Sean. It is frightening. Nabort says, how about a big shout-out to the Turkish Super League, where Fenerbahce have gone on an undefeated run. In the last 16 matches, they've only won draw. Two games remain there. Try with Trabzonspor on points, but lead via the head-to-head. A championship for the ages, says Nabort. Hey, tell you what.
Maybe. may well be.
Bilius, in reference to the tackle on Bale and Charlie Adam being not that kind of guy, which footballers do you think would make the biggest transformation to nice guy off the pitch and complete so-and-so on it? Well, Balotelli, somebody posted in, you have to say. Well, he's not that bad on it. He's just a bit surly, isn't he? Who else would you say? Paul Scholes?
No one really knows if he's a nice guy, though.
Ah. He might just be one of those people with bodies in the basement. It
could be terrible.
Yeah.
By reputation, Norman Hunter, going back quite a lot of years at Chelsea, he was called Norman Bites Your Legs Hunter.
Yeah.
But off the pitch, had a reputation as a gentleman. I spoke to him recently, in fact, and he's still a lovely guy, very generous with his time. Does a lot of good work for charity. And, I mean, I've met Graham Souness in the past and had very pleasant conversations with him.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he had a bit of a reputation on him as well.
Okay. But Pasquale Bruno, I'd say, would be my...
At the same time, a lot of, you know, fans get... All the only impression they get from players is, a lot of the time, is what's on the pitch. So with someone like Robbie Savage, who's just retired, you know, everyone's saying now, what a lovely guy, what a great pundit. But for a lot of fans, he's just someone who's wound them up for 20 years.
And Sony Award like winner, Robbie Savage.
Sony Award winner, yeah.
Okay. Worst of all, it looks like he's going to keep winding us up
for the next 20, yes.
That's enough posts for now. Hey, because big weekend coming up in football. All sorts of things are going on. We might need four parts just to cover them all. But let's crack on straight away with the race not to finish fifth, Liverpool Spurs. Now, Liverpool coming off that massive 5-2 win away to We Don't Concede Goals at Home, Fulham. Who saw this game? Because I didn't.
I saw the game, yeah.
Jacob.
Yeah.
It sounds extraordinary.
Well, it was slightly skewed. In the first three goals were atrocious defending and goalkeeping by Fulham. I don't know what Mark Schwartz was playing at for the first goal, where he got the... It wasn't a back pass, but he decided it was. And instead of picking it up, decided to kick it straight out to Maxi Rodriguez, who just... slammed it back in, and then the third goal, Kout hit it straight at him, and he just let it through his legs.
Right,
but at the same time, Liverpool with Suarez up front look like such a different side now. He's just unstoppable. He never stops running, and defenders can't knock him off the ball. They can't barge him off the ball. He's really skillful, and he took his goal brilliantly as well.
Mm. That's two hat tricks in a row, as you know,
for Maxi
Rodriguez. Dirk Kuyt's piling in the goals, and all of this is without Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, I wonder whether he's going to get back into the side. If there's one manager that could gradually phase him out, it would be Kenny Dalglish, because you know his best position is probably playing behind a striker like Torres, which Suarez is quite kind of going to play in that position now, especially with Andy Carroll, who's cost $35 million. You can't leave him on the bench.
Right.
And Gerrard, you know, might get... There could be a summer to sell him.
Well, certainly, if you look at... they're currently heavily linked with the move for Ashley Young. And you kind of think of the next season with Carroll, the big lad up front, Suarez and Young playing off him, and Gerrard having, at best, a very defensive role.
Mm. Well, they won their last three, scoring 13 goals and conceding two. At this point, you begin to think about title-winning form, question mark? I mean, what are the prospects for next season, Sean Ingle?
I mean, I think that's been slightly overdone. I thought Liverpool were brilliant on Monday, and I thought it was one of the best performances I've seen this season. However, they're being quoted as short, sort of 8-1 to win the league, and I wouldn't be doing that until you sort of see the kind of players they bring in this summer, because City are clearly going to spend big. United may spend again. Chelsea will probably spend big, especially if they get a new manager. So I think we shouldn't get carried away by one great performance. Just like, you know, I think you got carried away a little bit when Man City beat Sunderland a few weeks back and you were kind of hailing that performance. And I think, you know, on sober reflection, that maybe that, you know, it wasn't the case. But certainly Liverpool are going the right way, and they were very impressive on Monday.
But having said that, there's several reasons to look forward to next season in the Premier League. The top four, which was fairly static for a long time, now has six credible challenges.
Who's the other one?
If you count Tottenham and Liverpool and the teams that look like finishing the top four this time.
Right.
Manchester United are playing very well at the moment. Thought they were really, really great against Chelsea. But they've looked extremely fallible at times this season. And there's no reason to assume that they're necessarily going to win the league next year. Chelsea... you look at Terry and Lampard and Drogba, the spine of that team that they're going to have to replace in the near future. Manchester City are a big question mark and are still going to be. They'll have lots of money. Will they spend it wisely? Will they create a team that functions well enough to win the league? I don't see any reason why Tottenham, if they can sort out their attacking deficiencies, or Liverpool, can't challenge?
Well, Tottenham, because they don't have Champions League football, and it's quite possible that they could lose Bale and Modric in the summer.
Wango Kid, who's a Spurs fan, says, here's some interesting stats for you. Spurs this season, since the away win at Milan, have played 13, won one game, drawn seven and lost five. Under Ramos, their record was played 14 and won five. Not good enough from Redknapp. He needs to go, says Wango Kid, who I suspect is being a little bit provocative.
I don't know, there's quite a few Spurs fans who have started to turn against Redknapp.
Really?
Now. Yeah, yeah. They've not been able to beat the likes of Blackpool, West Brom and West Ham at home. And part of that is down to not having strikers, but then he did buy three of the strikers they went into the season with, spending big money on them.
Yeah. Wow, one win in the last 10 Premier League matches is very worrying.
But at the same time, though, I think if you're a Spurs fan, you look like Champions League football this season. I think sometimes, particularly with someone like Redknapp, some of the media, they over-egg him, they hail him as a great manager, his next England boss, and they go too far one way. And I think the Spurs fans that are saying perhaps he should go have gone too far the other. I think he's a decent manager, not a great manager, and I think he's done an all right job.
There was a real chance for them, though, this season to press on. And I think now, they really, with City likely to go and spend big again this summer, Liverpool coming back, there was a gap there for them to finish.
But you could say that about Arsenal. There was a chance for them to have won the league with United, away form. There was a chance for City if they had really gone for it. And you imagine a manager like Mourinho instead of Mancini, perhaps City could have won the league. I mean, you could say that.
But isn't
about
the point
teams.
That all those managers have faced questions about why they have failed to do that, and Redknapp is the only one who hasn't?
Yeah,
possibly. But I think most, if you look at Spurs historically, I think finishing
fourth, fifth, sixth is still a really big part of them. Surely not really the point. I mean, if you look at, but that, you have to talk about the present, not what they've done in the past.
Yeah, but okay, we'll even compare their wages and the amount of money they spend with
then,
the rest
of the big
four.
At the squad they've got. That team should be beating West Ham, Blackpool and Wigan at home, surely.
Well, let's move on then to the relegation battle. Of course, Blackburn, who are only 3 points from the drop, they face Man United. Man United looking to seal the title. They need, what, a point?
Yeah. I was just thinking last night, Milan needed a point away to win their league. Barcelona needed a point away to win the league. Now United do as well, so I wouldn't be surprised if...
The answer is Stoke, Jacob.
The answer is Stoke.
Okay, Blackburn, they're only 3 points from the drop. Then they're at Wolves on the final day. And Blackburn are still credible candidates for trips to championships.
I mean, I think a big... that's true, but I think it obviously depends on the two big games at the bottom this weekend, which have been Wolves travelling to Sunderland and then Wigan West Ham.
Is Wolves at Sunderland, is that a big game?
It's obviously for Wolves. I think Wolves need to get something, and they have the worst away record in the Premier League. They've only got 9 points this season. Mm. Sunderland, if you want to play anyone at home away... So if you want to play anyone away at the moment, then Sunderland are probably the team you want to face. Mm. But we'll see. It's a tricky game to call.
It could all be done this weekend. Mm. If Wolves win and Birmingham and Blackburn don't lose, and then if West Ham beat Wigan and Blackpool lose, then it's all over.
They haven't won in the last seven games, West Ham, but Wigan haven't won in the last six. So you're very optimistic about this, Jacob?
Oh, so optimistic, yeah. I've never been more confident about a side.
Right.
With Avram Churchill in the... as a friend of mine put it recently.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Worrying stuff there. Wigan, West Ham, the other games, Arsenal, Aston Villa, Chelsea taking on Newcastle, West Brom against Everton. Birmingham are up against Fulham, and Blackpool have Bolton, who do seem to be off on some holidays early, although Daniel Surridge, tricky customer.
I think Blackpool will win that game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That'll be their first win in ages, wouldn't it?
Their record is poor, but they have been looking decent recently.
Yeah.
They were unlucky against Spurs not to win away from home.
Yeah.
Right. And Bolton have sort of clocked off now, haven't they?
So at the end of the weekend, you think it's going to be West Ham still bottom, Jacob?
I think West Ham will be down on Sunday.
Right, yeah. A loss at Wigan. And then the other two in the Blackpool will move out of the bottom three then?
Well, it depends whether... I don't know. I mean,
if
Wolves,
you're predicting them to get a win in that game against Bolton.
Yeah, yeah. I think Wolves could win at Sunderland.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oof. And then Wigan was the other one, and they'll move out.
Yeah, so it'll all be going down to the final day.
Wow. Well, it is a very exciting situation then, a very exciting scenario in the Premier League. Also, playoffs, of course, this weekend. So much football going on. FA Cup stuck in the middle of it all. Very strange. Nottingham Forest against Swansea. That's tonight. That's Thursday night, Sean. Be a big game. Nottingham Forest, Jacob, you were saying that they're going to blow this kind of match, do they?
Well, they tend to implode in the playoffs. They did last season against Blackpool. I think when they're in League One, they had a couple of roller coaster games against Yeovil, if I remember rightly. Swansea playing really well at the moment. But Forest have, I think they've won 5 of the last 6, having gone on a horror run before then. So I think it'll be quite a tight game.
All right. And then is it tomorrow, Reading, Cardiff City?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That'd be interesting as well, wouldn't it? Cardiff equally not with the best of records in playoff scenarios.
Yeah. Hopefully they won't be out drinking tonight.
Yeah, right. Hear what you're saying. And then all sorts of other League 1 playoffs, League 2 players. You've got Bournemouth taking on Huddersfield, MK Dons against Peterborough, and then the League 2 players, Torquay United against Shrewsbury Town.
MK Dons v Peterborough should be a good tie, because Peterborough, just a cracking side who can't defend but can score loads and loads of goals. And Tom Lutz predicted a 17-10 on aggregate. So in his Football League blog.
Right.
It could be a really tasty final, that one. Huddersfield only just missed out on automatic promotion and will be favourite to beat Bournemouth. And a Huddersfield-Peterborough final would be a really tasty match. Would be, it won't be at Wembley, so it won't be a
match. It's Old Trafford, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
it should be really tasty. And also Stevenage, Accrington Stanley, the other League 2 playoff that you'd...
You've got all these young up-and-coming managers involved in these games as well. You know, Eddie Howe and Lee Clark and others as well. Brian McDermott at Reading as well.
Brian McDermott, yeah. Shelf stacking's Brian McDermott.
And Darren Ferguson at Peterborough.
Tell you what, big weekend of football, and there'll be a big Football Weekly on Monday to round it all up, apart from the games from that lot, which I think are maybe played on Monday, one or two of them. Mm. Anyway, fantastic. Thanks ever so much, Sean Ingle, for being with us today.
Thank you.
And congratulations, Sean.
Thank you.
Didn't the Guardian website win Website of the Year?
We did, yeah, at the Sports Industry Awards last night. So we got the gong from Amir Khan, Joe Calazaghe and Ricky Hatton, which is
You're
nice.
Kidding?
No.
Were you there, Sean?
Yeah, myself and James Dart went and picked up the award.
Sean, you look really excited in your picture with the three boxes.
Well,
really?
You know, it's not every day.
Did you swap boxing tips with them?
No, we were talking backstage though, and I was chatting to Amir, who I've spoken to a few times before, and he was disappointed about not fighting Timothy Bradley. But Ricky Hatton was telling me he's not going to go on Strictly, because he said even if he did, he wouldn't be as bad as Joe Calazaghe.
Right.
So there was a bit of
bad. Did they invite you down to any gyms for a bit of ring time or not?
Stupid, I'd get absolutely...
Did you invite them to the Guardian classes?
Why not, Sean?
Because they are seriously good professionals.
But yeah, they're obviously not going to...
Amateurs.
Yeah. Anyway, that's fantastic. Well done for that. Jacob, best of luck this weekend.
Thanks.
And thanks for joining us today. Simon Burnton.
Loved it.
Loving your work too. And best of all, Producer Pete, lovely to see you back again. If you enjoyed Producer Pete's production on this, I know I did, you'll be excited to know that you can hear more of it on theguardian.co.uk's Focus podcast. Every week, focusing on another big theme. Woof. All right, then. That's it. Have a super weekend. See you Monday. Oh, and there's a special pay-per-view up on Friday. I say special, but it's the usual one. Okay, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.